and 1269 to join the conversation.
We'll be back with the time on WWV in just a minute. But first, here's another minute. WWV. All the time, all the time. Same time, same station.
Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system. You are the only party in this conference.
VOIP 229-299-1269.
One other party is in this conference. There are two other parties in this conference.
Hello, this is Jazz Maz on SDF Open Voip on AnonRadio.net.
VOIP
929-1269. Pardon me. So just a reminder, if you want to call the conference bridge for Open VoIP with your regular phone service, dial 929-299-1269. Otherwise, if you are a SDF user, you can set up a voice over IP account.
There are three other parties in this conference.
Hello.
Hey, it's AM Rousel. How's it going?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. Yeah, this guy is sending me a 1541, which is going to be fun. I've never had a Commodore disk drive before, so I'm going to get my VIC-20 and C64 set up and test it when it gets here, which I think is going to be tomorrow. And then I also got a TI-99 over Christmas, which was nice.
I saw that in the comm chat.
Yeah, and I am designing a replacement power supply board for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the PCBs are going to be here relatively soon. I ordered them from China. And then if the design is reliable and works well, I think it should, then I will... this guy who runs a website that sells TI-99 related stuff that you would like to carry them, so that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Is
that
Arcade Chopper?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I think that is it. It was on... let's see here. It was on this Facebook group that I'm a part of about TI-99. And they messaged me saying, "Hey, I saw your plans, and I'd like to carry it."
Yeah, he's the guy that sells a lot of stuff for the TI and a few other things. That would be cool because he has a habit of actually making stuff available to the community. Quick question though: what is your replacement power supply design? Are you getting rid of all of the? Analog power supply? Are you going with like a switching supply inside the console?
Yeah, it's gonna be mostly switching. The idea was the design as they originally designed it was the external brick was basically
other parties in this conference.
Just a transformer.
Yeah, just letting this person join. Yeah, it was just a transformer that would give I think it was like 17 volts and 8.5 volts AC, and then internally it was like the rectifier and then the analog power supply. And so with this design, it should fit right into the internal, like where the original internal power supply was. And then you can give it any DC voltage from 13 to 19 volts. So you could just use any laptop power supply or any brick you have laying around, basically. I was thinking about doing another version that could also potentially use USB-C. As the input, because with modern USB-C chargers,
they can deliver a lot more power. Yeah,
they can deliver a lot more power. I actually, on another project that I'm doing for money, but not as a hobby, I'm using a USB-C controller chip, and it's amazing. You can draw a lot of power depending on what the adapter can supply, like well over 100 watts if you need. I think that's how the new MacBooks charge, right? I think it's all USB-C.
Yeah, I think so. I think even if that isn't their primary charge, I think they're perfectly capable of charging off of any of the USB-C ports.
Yeah. And,
you may not get full current off of the one that wasn't intended to charge it, but
right.
It'll still work, which is kind of
And the TI-99 doesn't take that much current. I did a couple measurements just to see what it was going to take, and it has +12, +5, and -5, which is a bit annoying, of course, getting
it's
five.
Because it's, early NMOS stuff, so...
Exactly. It needs that negative power supply.
Yeah.
It's not hard to just use an inverting switching power supply, so that's what I do. I just get from the input to +12, and then from the +12, that generates both the plus and -5. And it should be, it was something like less than an amp on the 12 volt, and then it was like a really small amount, like 70 milliamps on the plus and -5 or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it's Jazzmaz and Sam Rousel so far talking. I think there's other people
here. Who is our third party? Or fourth? Including the
me.
Archiver. Me. Who's me?
This is Handy C.
Oh, hey, Handy C.
Oh, it's Handy C. Hey.
Hi.
Jasmine and A.M. Rousel.
I feel terrible.
You feel terrible? Are you sick?
No, I just heard about the missile strike.
Oh. Yeah, it's not so cool.
It is not going terribly well, but I have a feeling that things will probably simmer down, because I don't think that the U.S. is going to actually do some sort of invasion or full-scale war. It would just be a losing prospect.
Well, you're thinking about it rationally.
That's true. Yes, it's me, DJ Amar. Snowdust is confused. Oh, they thought it was just Hobbs C talking to himself.
I have a MacBook. I have one of the new ones. And it,
yeah,
it
so is that all USB-C charging?
It's all USB-C. All, it's got two USB-C ports on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just plug it in anywhere. And that is how it charges.
Now, that's kind of cool, but at the same time, I've never been a fan of Apple stuff. I really don't like Apple at all. But one of the great things about the MacBook was the MagSafe thing. Like, that was a really neat idea,
yeah,
so that you can't trip and, you know, send your laptop flying, which
yeah,
I have done with other laptops.
I wish they would have, like, a combination of a USB-C and the MagSafe together.
Yeah,
like,
you can get third-party ones that do that. There's a little stub you stick into the USB-C side, and then you have a magnetic cable that clicks onto it for charging.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen them on Amazon.
Yeah, because my wife has the same machine, and we've already tripped over it and knocked it off the desk.
Yeah, they're like, you know, anywhere from like 10 to 30 bucks. 30 bucks looks like a pretty quality one. And they even have a one that's $40 that has all of the USB 3.1 pins, whereas the other ones, I think, just has the power pins for charging, up to 87 watts. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have bought... My work bought this for me, because they said they would buy me whatever kind I wanted.
Right.
But I don't know if I would have bought a Mac again if it had been my money.
Yeah.
Because I really have mixed feelings about the direction Apple is going in.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had to choose, I would have gotten like a System 76 laptop or something.
I might do that next time in a couple of years.
Yeah, I really like the way their a couple of their laptops look. I actually use Pop OS, which is their like customized version of Ubuntu that specifically supports dual GPUs, which is what my laptop has, which is kind of
nice. Okay.
Yeah. I'm assuming that most of their stuff must be rebranded laptops from another brand, but I haven't been able to figure out what they're rebranding. They just kind of look like sort of generic laptops, but they have pretty good specs. But yeah, some of them are pretty pricey.
What's considered a good laptop in the non-Apple world these days?
Oh, I mean, there's quite a few, but...
what kind of specs are considered, like, top-of-the-line?
Well, top-of-the-line, you can go as high as you want, almost, but I think for a premium laptop, probably 32 gigs of RAM, 16 or 32 gigs of RAM.
Yeah,
probably,
that's what I got in this, is 32.
Nice. Yeah, probably an NVMe SSD is the boot drive. Sometimes they also have... magnetic secondary drive as well. Although you can get like 1 and 2 terabyte NVMe solid state drives now, which is just insane. I'm just so used to having my operating system on a solid state drive and everything else magnetic. Having everything be solid state would be kind of nice, but they are pretty expensive.
I love it because I like how silent it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice.
I don't think I could go back to a regular hard drive again.
I've actually noticed recently that I think the hard drive on my laptop, I mean, it's getting old. I'm definitely starting to notice performance hit when it's trying to load programs off of the hard drive rather than off the solid state. Someone was asking 32 gigs of RAM, how much do you find yourself actually using? I mean, it really Depends.
Depends on your usage, right?
Yeah.
It's like I can get by with 32, but
I have 8 on this laptop.
But
well,
yeah, it's a bit of a stretch.
I'm on a unique project where we do a lot of pretty intensive linguistics stuff.
And, yeah, you can easily use up RAM when you're doing stuff like that. It's very easy.
Yeah, it's easy to use up a lot of RAM and a lot of hard drive space.
Yeah.
So that's why I really maxed this one out. It has a 1 terabyte SSD and 32
Sweet.
Gigs of RAM. I don't know what kind of processor it has, but I think it has 16 cores on the processor. Is that
possible?
Let me see what...
Who are they talking about? Who got banned on Mastodon? Really
it comes up when I run HTOP. It comes up as 16 cores. So.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't use anything quite that powerful day to day. Most of my stuff is cheap garbage.
Yeah,
what I usually do if I'm funding stuff myself. But I figured.
Yeah, they're like, what do you want? They're like, well, here, let me write this into the proposal and see if it gets thrown out.
They didn't get it for me either, because they didn't think I needed something that powerful. But if it's got to last for a couple of years, I thought, I want to buy this once and be done with it.
Yeah, I'm due for a new laptop for sure. I bought this when I was still in college, and it's definitely showing its age. It's time for a new laptop, and I've been looking at System 76 because they're so nice, but they are quite expensive. I think the reason there's a bit of a premium on them is because, they have to hire people to build them and install Linux on them and stuff, whereas with, the huge OEMs, they just, they have an agreement with Microsoft or whatever, they pay a few cents, and then they just slap in laptops or slap in hard drives with pre-installed Windows on them. And
right. Well, I mean, it's an economy of scale, so.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a couple
of
them.
We're
going to
make X thousand of this particular model, and
we
can build them at this price point, and there's this much left over for markup.
I definitely want a 17-inch laptop. This one's 17-inch, and anything smaller than that now, I just, the display seems so tiny to me.
I actually like small form factor, lightweight laptops, but that's
OTV
just me. I know, I can understand the small display can be somewhat of a problem, but,
And,
I've also had to drag around laptops that were like doorstops, and that was no fun.
Yeah, this one's pretty heavy, and I had to carry it to and from school every day, too. It made my backpack really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm just looking at this now. So, I don't know, a little over $1,000.
I had the 13-inch MacBook before this, and I liked it a lot. And my wife convinced me to get a larger screen, and I'm happy that I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think I would want to carry around a 17-inch laptop, though.
Probably not. Yeah, for a lot of people it's inconvenient.
This is a reasonable size.
But then again, you think about it sometimes that some people's use cases, like they just have the laptop, it's more functions more as a portable, but it spends most of its lifetime on like one of two desks.
Well, a lot of the new phones with USB-C, you can plug... I guess you can plug in anything. You can plug in you can already plug in a mouse and keyboard, but you can also do HDMI outputs.
Yeah, for sure.
And so you could carry around like a cheap mouse and keyboard and use your phone as your screen, and then if you get to like a hotel with an HDMI TV,
you
just
could
plug
put
it
on
into
that,
and then you have like a portable computer. And you could just, connect to a virtual server or something and just run everything from that.
Yeah, I mean, I've done things like that where I've used the hotel TV as sort
Hello
of a
and welcome.
Monitor
it is now
with a
time
small
for
form
SDFO
factor
to
device.
VoIP.
Yeah, it really wasn't
Please
a great
dial
option until we started getting high-definition television.
Conversation.
Yeah, it's only right. now really becoming feasible, I think. And I just got a new phone.
Sorry?
I got a Moto G7 Plus, and I wanted to try this, but it's still not even advanced enough to do the HDMI output. I can't remember what it's called, but there's some special feature it has to have to allow for that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's a standard that you can send HDMI over USB. Samsung devices have supported it for quite a long time. That was one of their selling features. I have a Pixel. I'm not actually sure if this supports display out over USB-C. I would imagine it probably does. Wow, yeah, you can spend a lot of money on designing a system on this website. They give you a base price, and you're like, oh, that's not too bad, but then it's like, oh, that's...
it's like visiting the Dell retail site, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's not too bad, and then it's like, oh, I need a little more memory, and I need a bigger hard drive, and it's like, oh, it's twice the price now.
Yep, exactly. All of a sudden it's $1,500 instead of $900. Wow. Yeah, this is crazy. And this is actually a Dell laptop, and I don't know if I would buy Dell again. The one thing that really pisses me off is that the charger is it has three pins on it, and the third pin is a data channel. So if you plug in a non-Dell thing, it'll let you run the laptop, but it won't charge the battery, and it'll throttle the CPU down, which is annoying. But the cable is starting to wear. I've had to re-solder the connector a couple of times now because that data channel will break, and then even though it's a legitimate Dell adapter, it'll complain and throttle it down to 800 megahertz. It's just like, what a horrible thing to do to your customers. And they still want, this is getting to be a pretty old laptop now, and they still want like $100
for
a new
replacement
tower
supply.
Yeah. It's like, come on.
I know, especially if it's like their enterprise level laptops. It's like it never seems like any of the surplus parts ever get any cheaper with time.
Yeah, they know people need it.
It's like I've had some older Dell Latitude variety laptops over the ages, and it's like, oh, you know, they're kind of, you know, the battery's nearing its end of life. I wonder how much the replacement costs. It's like $75 or more.
Wow.
Like, ugh. It's like, yeah, I think it's time to start shopping around for its replacement.
Now, here's Inspiron 17, 2000. That's not too bad. 749. Oh, this is... Oh, no, I went to the Canadian website, so that's Canadian.
Hey, I'm going to take off, you guys. It's pretty late here. It's almost 3:30 in the morning, so...
Okay, have a good night.
Yeah. Probably
yeah,
time
nice
to go to sleep.
Yeah, nice talking to you, Andy C.
Yeah, take care.
Yeah, people are discussing what we're talking about in comm. The native resolution for MacBook Pro.
I'm just going to grow some organic LED matrixes on my walls and ceiling.
Yeah. 1680 by 1050. Huh. I'm pretty sure... Yeah, that's sort of weird. That's sort of in between. That's not quite 1080. But this machine, I'm pretty sure this is 1600 by 900.
I don't even want to look at mine. Well, mine's sort of like... a smaller form, the one that I use day-to-day is smaller form factor, lightweight Lenovo IdeaPad, so it's like a 10-inch display. it doesn't have much storage or RAM in it, but, I mean, most of what I need it for day-to-day is VPN connections and remote sessions, so it's fine. Right, it's, the screen's a little small, but I can manage. Be better if my eyesight was a little better, but...
Yep.
Unfortunately, I don't think that's in the cards at this point.
Jesus, $1,600. I just can't bite the bullet on a new laptop right now. But I'm going to have to do it sooner or later. Especially if this one fails at some point, then I'll be...
Yeah. So far, I've been lucky with this guy. It's been a little bit of a weird experience because it's got a strange sort of almost single-board computer-y laptop where everything's GPIO rather than formal, you know, Northbridge or a Southbridge chipset on it. So driver support under Linux has been fun throughout its lifetime, but it's generally worked pretty well for me. I've had it functioning for about 4 years now, I guess.
Right, right.
So I think I've gotten my $150 out of it.
I can't believe I'm looking at the Dell. The cheapest laptop they sell is only $250, which is pretty amazing. But that's like an Intel Celeron with 64 gig hard drive and 4 gigs of RAM. It's like, and a bunch of their laptops here only have 4 gigs of RAM. It's like, come on, it's 2020. Like, 4 gigs is barely enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wouldn't be able to do much of anything.
Right.
I'm trying to see how many...
That's not true. It just depends what you want to do with it. I mean, for me, it works, yeah, you know, mine's got 2 in it and 4 cores. But as I said, my use case is pretty moderate.
Right. Well, this one isn't too bad. $700. And it does have 2 RAM slots, so I could upgrade it pretty easily.
And also, I don't use a conventional desktop. I'm still, you know, just using a window manager and a horde of terminals.
Yeah, I'm sort of half and half. Half the time I'm in terminal or Emacs, the other half I'm on Chrome. So mm-hmm. Sort of back and forth. Jeez, actually, some of these places aren't that bad. It's just that it's a 15-inch. I really want a 17-inch. Well, that's not too bad. Let's see what's going on in COM. Yeah, $250. Yeah, isn't that crazy, Snowdust? I mean,
yeah.
It'll work, but, you know, 4 gigs of RAM, the Intel Celeron. It comes with Windows 10S, which is like the cut-down version.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Windows 10S is that really crappy one that you can't install any software that's not in the Windows Store.
Yeah.
Which is pretty
unfortunate.
Awful. Yeah, limited lockdown operating system. You can only install apps from the store. You can only browse the web.
You can only install apps and viruses and other assorted malware.
Yeah. Mostly just spyware, all the Microsoft crap. Yeah, you can only use Microsoft Edge. Ooh, man, I would throw it off a cliff. Yeah, it's like, that's so funny. All these things, it's like telling you it comes with Windows, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I would rather take a discount and have it come with no
operating system.
And for ages, I remember there was that whole thing back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where it was like, get your refund day. And I think it still says in the end user agreement, like, if you don't use this, you can return it for a refund. But like, good luck trying to get the money. Yeah.
Right, and it'll be minimal because they're paying for volume license. So it's probably like $15 for them. But for you, a retail copy will cost you $150.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, yeah, some of these sales are pretty good. I could finance it, but I hate having monthly payments. $20 a month, it's not bad. Well, you should get one of those.
So Snowdust is laughing out loud about an AS400. Like, I have, what is it, I think three AS400s in my place where I live.
Oh, Snowdesk, I actually sent you an email. I was configuring Alpine, and I was trying to make sure that it was working properly. If you can respond to that email, that would be awesome. And yeah, I would love to. There's actually been times where when I, because I write articles for a few different websites, and there's been times where I would almost rather be on a terminal where there's like no distractions, it's just you and the text editor.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking about setting something up like that, trying to see if I could find an old terminal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's not hard to find an old terminal. It's a matter of going through the effort to get it, find it and get it and set it up.
The prices are probably going to be prohibitive, though. They seem to sell for quite a lot.
Well, it depends what kind of terminal and where you're getting it from. I mean, if you're in the market of, I must buy it online and have it delivered to my door, yeah, you're going to pay for
true.
It. If you happen to find one, like if there's a recycling place, you know, computer recycling place, those things can tend to pop up there.
Right.
As people get rid of stuff, it's like, oh, look, it's a VT220.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes it may take a couple of attempts to get the terminal and the keyboard and a working keyboard.
Yeah. I should see. I'm pretty sure there's some big electronics recyclers here in Toronto.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, chances are if you join the Toronto CBM list and made a post, like, hey, I'm looking for a terminal, someone will probably have.
I'm part of the Toronto Pet Users Group now, which is actually
cool. Did you were you over at World of Commodore this year?
I was not. I'm on the Discord, and I discovered TPUG. Well, I'd sort of heard of it, but I only looked into it right after World of Commodore had ended. I was like, ah, god damn it.
No, I was just curious that maybe we met each other in passing, because I was there for it.
Oh, cool. Are you a member, or are you from out of town?
I'm from out of town. I'm from Chicago, but they're close enough.
Okay.
Yeah, Toronto's close enough that that usually there's a small expedition of people from Chicago that go out there.
I forgot that they have Free Geek Toronto. I always thought that
Vancouver,
but they got Free Geek here as well.
Yeah, because sometimes that stuff will just pop up and they don't know what to do with it other than just do materials recycling with it. And
yeah, for sure.
If you donate a couple bucks at them for it, I'm sure they're happy to have you cart it off.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
And like I said, it might take a little bit of an effort to find, you know, a good working terminal and a good working keyboard that goes with it. But you never know. But like you said, sometimes, if you wanted just, you know, buy it online and get it delivered to your door, you're going to pay a couple hundred bucks for it probably.
Yeah.
Especially considering there's still companies out there that refurb and release those things.
Holy crap, look at some of the stuff they have. That's unbelievably cheap. I might have to go check out Free Geek. Oh, yeah, I'm back in Toronto now. Snowdesk, I got home on Saturday. Oh, and I see your response. Perfect. Okay, so that did come into the right folder. Excellent.
So you're another Pine Alpine user?
It's the only, like, email console application that on SDF that I actually sort of like the look of, so I'm just starting to learn how to use it. I was originally just using mail.
Right. Yeah, the Unix style command line mail.
Yep. That's right, there's Mutt. I forgot about Mutt.
Yeah, Mutt's also another good one. I especially like their motto, or what I think their motto used to be, was like, all male user agents suck, Mutt just sucks a little less.
That's very true. I was, Elm, that's right. But Elm is the original.
Yeah, Elm, but the problem is in a lot of distributions, Elm isn't really supported anymore. I forget what the deal was, if it if the licensing was less...
That was part of the problem, and that's where Alpine came
in. Right,
because
Alpine is a re-implementation of Pine, not actually the University of Washington Pine project.
And Pine was a re-implementation of Elm, as far as I go, and that's why, you know, they're all tree names.
Yeah.
But on my laptop, I either use Thunderbird or I use MU4E in Emacs, depending.
Yeah, I still predominantly use Alpine. Occasionally, you know, I'll fire up the Gmail web interface when I need to do something that it will do. You know, basically when I need an inline image or something like that.
Right. One of the things that I liked when I was reading about Alpine is, like, it's designed so that it's easy to use for newbies, but it can also be tweaked as much as you want, basically.
Yeah.
You can take it to whatever.
Yeah, I used to get a lot of crap when it came. The original Pine used to get a lot of crap from people when it emerged as being kind of Elm for dummies. But, I mean, it's still all hotkey-driven. I mean, you can use the menu interface, but you can also memorize the hotkeys and even redefine them. So, I mean, it's as functional as Elm ever was.
Yep, for sure. Actually, reminds me, I don't think I've set up offline IMAP on this machine yet. No, I have not. Does Alpine, is it just like a mail directory reader, or does it also
it'll do Usenet too. It'll actually do Usenet on SDF, although I'm not sure Usenet is working 100% on SDF right now.
The last couple of times I tried it, it wasn't, unfortunately.
I think you can post out, because I did send out a couple notices the other day to Usenet group, and I could see them from the Google Groups view of it.
Right.
But for some reason, I don't think we are getting inbound messages.
I'm not even sure how to access it. I looked into it a couple of times, and I just had trouble connecting.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as, like, if you want to do it in Alpine, all you have to do is define the news server, which is, I think, just news.sdf.org. But as I said, I don't think you're going to be able to read anything. I think you'll be able to blind post, but
right.
I'm sure people will love you for that. But I guess that's a thing I should probably email the membership or put it in the in the appropriate B-board topic.
Jeez, I haven't checked B-board.
I think that happened kind of during the period of time when they were getting ready for that major upgrade just before the new meta array.
Right.
But certain things started going wonky, and they've been been taking care of them.
Yeah.
But my guess is not a lot of people are using Usenet, so nobody to complain.
Right.
Or I should say, nobody to bring up the issue.
I was trying to log into Nextcloud on SDF, and for some reason it was telling me I had the wrong username and password. Yeah, it's saying it's still wrong username and password. That's really weird.
I don't know too much about that. I think I allocated credentials for that at the same time I allocated credentials for the meta array. I don't know if maybe you have to redefine them now that the new meta array is online, maybe. You have to go in and reset
that
stuff,
possible.
Perhaps.
But I tried to get it to send a password reset email, but I just never got anything. So maybe I will go into Mate and check it out there. Anyway, I'm going to run. I just heard my brother come home, so I'm going to go say hi to him. And,
okay.
Yeah, nice chatting with you.
Yeah, nice talking to you, too. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, so it is now just me, Jazzmans, again. Just a reminder, if you want to call into the conference bridge using your regular telephone service, you can dial 929-1269.
Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO
until
VOIP.
Someone else joins in on the conference
please
bridge, I'm going to probably mute my mic and just continue to monitor.
To join the
and if someone joins, I'll just pick up. And then maybe I'll check in again before we end the open VoIP block.
To VOIP 929-299-1269.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
Yes, Snowdusk, if you remember, early versions of Netscape as well had an animated logo as well. And I believe they too were, the animation was active kind of relative to the page loading. And I think, I don't know if 100%, I have to actually look, but I think essentially, the Microsoft logo motion is basically a copy of that. I think Netscape had that feature, that non-useful feature, the eye candy feature, before Microsoft Internet Explorer did.
VOIP 929
Not that, you know, sort of, that, you know, having some sort of weird sort of animation on the screen while the program was doing something in the background or while you're waiting for an update of the screen is something new. But there's been all sorts of programs that sort of did the same kind of trick to make users be a little more patient with the lack of performance of the program. I always love the little ASCII progress bars myself. Yeah, I don't think I ever ever used or encountered Microsoft's chat offering to IRC. I've been kind of an IRC or die kind of person. I mean, IRC to or die kind of person for a long time. And even when it's not directly IRC2, it's a graphical front end to IRC2, known as TKIRC2. Then I dabbled a little bit in the MIRC program in the Windows days, and I thought in some cases, you know,
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a PenMic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
IRC2 program, which is a TCL TK front end to the IRC2 client. Although, one thing I've noticed as of late, as of the, the change of the IRC server during SDF's upgrade period, TKIRC isn't too happy about that change of server, so I'll have to figure out what's going on with that. Yes, no dusk. Yeah, there was a period of time before I made the final switch to Linux for my primary usage, and in that brief period of time, I used MIRC2, and then I think at some point in time, they went from a basically free version to everybody's got to pay model, and I decided, to go elsewhere. That it was useful and convenient to a point, but not enough to pay, the $20 or $30 they were trying to get out of everybody for it. And I'm not opposed to commercial software. It's just the problem is it's when you've been giving stuff away for a while, and then suddenly it's like, okay, everyone's got to pay now regardless, then it's kind of like, eh. Especially when there are other things that generally worked better. It's like the reason why I used IRC2 back in the day was because my early experience with using the internet was largely the internet provider provided you dial-up access and a Unix shell, and that was pretty much it. If you were a little more knowledgeable, you could set up a slip connection if you wanted to run TCP/IP native apps on your local computer. But I don't know, I think it was easier for me to just use the Unix shell in the earlier days, and I didn't really get until Windows started having, started getting really a functioning TCP/IP stack. I think the only thing I really liked using within the Windows environment, accessing the internet, was I did like using, Agent News Reader for Usenet access was kind of convenient. Once again, sort of that issue of if you were downloading images or anything from Usenet. I think it eventually got the ability to kind of display inline or at least feed it to a local application that was, since you're running Windows and it's graphical, it was just slightly more convenient, because I think at that point in time I was not, not really using, I think Linux was still kind of in its infancy, and would have been a couple of years after I started using Linux before I ended up using it really for something more desktop-oriented before I started using X-Windows. And for those who may be listening in and wondering who the heck I'm talking to other than myself, SDF also has its own little sort of internal...
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a PenMic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
COM at the command line. It will dump you into a multi-user chat program. And then you can hit the G key or... I forget. It's just sort of automatic when I get in there. To basically go to the Anon radio room. That's where a large portion of people hang out. Oh, JBug is 29 is saying he's using Mac IRC 68K right now. Yeah, and for me, SDF was sort of, you know, basically an intersection of my ISP no longer supports Usenet and or provides me with a Unix shell, and I happened to find SDF through the freeshell.org domain name that's attached to it. And it's like, hey, this is a pretty cool idea. They're still, you know, providing shell accounts that are essentially free as in cost and functions on sort of a donation contribution model. So, you know, the more you donate, the more perks you tend to get. That's something that's always kind of makes the... makes things, you know, being meta, is it's always kind of a nice thing that occasionally that the SDF organizers will occasionally throw you an extra perk, like, I think this last one that went around was, you know, complimentary admission to the Living Computer Museum and Living Computers Museum and Labs. I'm thinking about a trip up to Seattle, so I may put that to use. And sometimes, you know, some years, you know, they'll do sort of a double dues kind of thing to kind of stimulate to stimulate MetaARPA users to continue to be at the MetaARPA contribution level. But, yeah, you can read about that in the membership on SDF.org, I think in the, FAQ or something like that. But I think we're down to our last couple of minutes, so I will once again reiterate, this is SDF Open VoIP on anonradio.net. Open VoIP can be heard every night from 0200 to 0300 hours UTC. Anyone can call, anyone can talk about whatever they like. If you don't have an account at SDF, you can call using your regular phone service by dialing 929-299-1269. If you do have an SDF account, you can check out the tutorial section, and it will describe how to set up a voiceover IP account here at SDF. Other than that, our next block of activity is open mic. Open mic is your opportunity to be a DJ on Anon Radio. For more information, visit anonradio.net and click on the open mic link. So from time to time, we'll get a few people on there and we'll get a little surprise performance. So I'm going to say goodnight at this point and perhaps I will talk again soon.
Hello, and welcome.